This is episode 24 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk some more about Orange Sticker. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn. When your friends are gone, when your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. So show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I haven't been able to get that stupid freaking Lo Fang song, You're the One That I Want, out of my head.
It's not stupid.
I've been singing it
was awesome
since Sunday, every goddamn day, and what do I do to get this out of my brain?
Watch Thomas the Train.
Which happens on a daily basis at our house.
That's what happens when you have a toddler. Well, you know what? I want to applaud Max Richter, but as well as whoever else is on the music team making these choices, because honest to God, The Leftovers has brought it to a new level this season.
A whole brand new level. I mean, between Where Is My Mind and the Pixies, and then also the instrumental version of that with the piano, and now this, and it's fantastic. And you know what I found myself doing the other day, too?
What?
I found myself singing Let the Mystery Be in my car. I found myself singing it, and I don't know why, but I was singing it, and it came out, and I was like, oh my God, am I starting to like this song? Am I starting to like the opening now? I don't know. I don't know. Do you?
I think it sounds like it.
Have you found that the opening is okay yet? Are you still on board with it?
You know,
or are you not on board with it? Are you done with it?
I'm going to tell you after this season, because I think, as I said, it's supposed to be a whole new tone for season two.
Yep.
And I'll let you know how I feel about the opening by the end of season two,
mm-hmm.
if it was fitting. So this is going to be the start of our new second episodes of
per
the
week
because yeah. Listener feedback is just too amazing and too intense. And rather than make our episodes ginormous
and pretty much half-ass everything, really, to get it all in a manageable episode, we decided, screw it, we're going to have two episodes. I mean, because we could do listener feedback, but we found that we weren't engaging enough with listener feedback. We were just kind of saying it, you know what I mean? We were just kind of going along to get along, and that's not what we're about. We want to engage with you guys as much as we can. Engage the ideas, engage the theories. You know, I sound like Jean-Luc Picard a little bit here, but engage. That's the most important part. That's why we're all here together, to talk about this stuff. So welcome to this amazing new adventure that we have going. This is the first time we've ever done this, really. I mean, in earnest. Of having two episodes per week. And I'm so happy that we're choosing to do this. I'm really excited about it.
Me too. First off, we wanted to mention that Steph Wanamaker on Facebook said the choice for two episodes made me really happy. You guys are by far the best podcasting couple. I love the conversation and the terms of endearment. Very in-depth analysis and a great sense of humor as well. I am now a $5 patron and you guys should feel very special. I listen to 16 podcasts a week, but only support 2. Keep up the great work, Blake and Mary. And Steph, we want to say thank you. Holy smokes, we are so unbelievably honored.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I mean, first of all, 16 podcasts a week. I mean, that's a part-time job in and of itself. But to know that we're part of that rotation, number one. But two, you felt so strongly that you wanted to make a $5 Patreon donation. That means a lot to us. That means an extraordinarily a large amount to us. In fact, I'm quite honored. And Thank you. Oh,
yes.
So freaking much. That's why I wanted to call this out, because now obviously the $5 thing is great, but knowing that we're part of that rotation that you have, and for all the listeners, we're part of your rotation that you listen to, that you allow us to be in your ears on a very personal level. That means a lot to us. But my love, now as for terms of endearment, how we do this, my love. What did we forget last week? Actually, you know what I realized? It's not last week. It's still this week.
It is still this week. What did we forget earlier this week? We forgot the goat. The goat coming out of the liquor store.
That's right.
So the guy's, I guess, retracing his steps. Lord knows, does he do it every day? Does he do it once a week on every Tuesday? I don't know.
I know. And where is he getting all these goats? Does he have like a farm of goats that he just like herds around?
Maybe he is. Maybe he's a goat farmer.
But it was really good. So they're coming out of the liquor store with Nora and Virgil. They were there. It was right before Nora goes into the liquor store. The guy comes out who killed the goat in the first episode in the diner. He's got another one and he's walking out with it. So it just makes you wonder, where the hell is he going with all these goats? And why the hell is he doing it with all these goats?
I know what he does.
And how many goats does he actually have, right? Oh yeah, we do know what he's got. And the next thing we didn't really cover a whole lot is in fact that Grease cover from Lo Fang. In fact, I'll even put the link to that song.
You better shape up.
It's kind of creepy.
I need me.
It was really a beautiful rendition. In fact, I think I like it better than the actual Olivia Newton-John rendition.
Whoa. Stop.
I'm going there.
You know, Olivia Newton-John might come and spite you. She's pretty powerful.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
In every sense of the
word. But that was a beautiful cover.
It was really good.
So cool.
It's haunting.
And as he's crawling into bed with her, and I'm like, yeah, you better shape up. You better start telling people about Patty.
Yep.
Because Nora's confused, man.
And just knowing that, like, I've got chills, they're multiplying. Like, when you start thinking about it in those terms.
And I'm losing control.
And I'm losing control. In terms of Kevin Garvey.
And Patty.
And Pat, all of it.
It's not even a Nora Kevin song. It's
no.
A Patty Kevin song.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. So we should, like, ship them.
No, I don't know. Gosh, you know who's already, though, in a relationship that we forgot to talk about? Matt and his wife.
Yes, we were so freaking excited about the whole Patty and Kevin thing and Nora with the handcuffs. And pretty much the entire episode, that we just kind of blew off Matt and his wife. And I feel really bad about that because Matt dropped a huge bomb on us. A huge bomb.
That he did.
And his wife woke up. Granted, she did go back to her vegetative state.
But for one night.
But for one night, they sat up and talked with each other. And of course, she didn't want to go to the hospital. She didn't want to do any of that. And it's funny because he's almost referring to Mary as like this. He's like, he's referring back to her as, well, no, of course, it's her. All she wanted to do was just talk. Like, it was almost like that she was just back to normal, and he was accepting that.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of that scene in The Notebook when she wakes out of her...
Oh, my
her
God.
Forget, what's the, her Alzheimer's, and she's like, how long do we have?
Not long.
And they just chat and embrace. But then they die. So Matt and his wife didn't die, but... For those of you who haven't seen The Notebook yet, sorry, just ruined it.
Spoiler alert.
But it reminded me of that. It reminded me when Matt was talking about how excited he was that the love of his life came back.
Yes.
Even for a few moments.
Yes.
And then we saw him later on in a prayer circle.
That's
praying
correct.
For Evie and the girls to be found.
Yeah, and the thing I wanted to highlight about this was Nora comes walking up as she's doing the search, and she sees Matt and she joins the prayer circle, and it's everything seems to be fine, but Matt does this curious thing. He starts reciting, "We are the 9,261. We are spared." Now that's important, really. That's really important because he is now considering himself one of that community. Matt, granted, he was spared in a sense because he was not departed, but he was not part of that community, and he's reciting it as though he is. And Nora looks at him like, dude, what are you doing? Like, this is that's bullshit. Why are you even trying to be a part of that community? It's like one thing for him to be the pastor and one thing to have guidance and do the prayer circle. But do you think it's fair and right for him to actually recite those words?
Well, the part that bothered me was the word spared. Because mm-hmm. you're kind of, the way you say it in that context makes it seem like those who departed had something bad happen to them. Mm-hmm. We were spared.
Yes.
We were spared. Thank God we were spared. Mm-hmm. Nora's whole family wasn't spared.
Yep.
So if you're using that word in that kind of context, that something bad happened to the people who did depart,
yep.
Nora's like, I don't want to be in on this.
But even on a logical level, do you think it's okay that Matt is
making himself
one of these miracle residents, like, hey, we like, I start thinking about it. We are the 9,261. No, Matt, you're not part of that. You're there. I agree.
But you were not in Jardin.
But you were not there. You were not part of that 9,261.
And they're not going to make new signs that say 9,600. 9,263.
No, it's not going to happen.
No.
So, I mean, that I felt like that was a little disingenuous on his part. And the way that I interpreted it from Nora was that she, too, felt that it was a little disingenuous. All right, my love, are you ready to get in the rest of the listener feedback?
You bet.
All right, let's do it. All right, let's go over the emails. The first one we got was from Wim, and he says, I think there is an interesting link between the Gavis and the Murphys. Like Patty said, it's not so sure who is part of whose story here. I think Kevin and John are different sides of the same coin, both struggling to stay sane, both trying to not lose control, both ignoring anything remotely supernatural, even though deep inside they know it exists, both lost contact with one of their children, and assuming that Christmas Lights Guy is in fact John's dad, Christmas Lights Guy being Virgil.
What?
Both have fathers whose senses go beyond what's visible and explainable. Whoa, Wim, you just blew my freaking doors off with that.
That's my sound. On Facebook, Missy Ortiz says, when Nora put Lily in the box, who cringed?
Well, how did you feel about that? Speaking of that,
oh my God, I felt totally cool, Missy, because actually in many countries, putting your baby in a box is their version of a safe crib.
Is it really?
Yeah. I don't know if it's like Sweden or Finland or something, but actually they send you home as a new mom with a box and it has like diapers and baby stuff and it is a box for your baby to sleep in.
Wow.
Until the baby can outgrow it. And they've realized that like SIDS has gone down tremendously when babies sleep in a box.
That's weird.
So I saw it and I was like, oh, look at you, Nora. You're so hip and you didn't even know it.
It reminds me of the time when I used to take Reese into work and I'd put him in the big box.
Yeah.
And because I needed to contain him.
I was happy she put her in a box because sometimes I've got to do something and I just put my kid on the floor. And Lily is old enough to roll around.
Wade Buonadonna? Oh my God, if I got that right, I'm awesome. I'm guessing Patty is telling the truth, Wayne says. I'm guessing that they lie and say girls are spotted so they can keep the attraction going for the town. But you can't have it both ways. They don't want miracles, but they want to keep the attraction going.
Well, now that's how the town is financially surviving. And think about the chaos that will ensue with all those crazy people outside the gates.
I love that word attraction. It's almost like it's a theme park now.
Oh, it is.
You know, people go in there. You saw them rush to the water. And for what purpose? It's just freaking
water.
Welcome
to Jurassic Park.
Again, it's ascribing. Yep, I have that.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
That's what it feels like when they open the gates.
I know.
Then you go inside and you're like, the raptors are loose.
I feel like the people are, again, ascribing meaning to this water. And whether it's good or bad or whatever, they're making money off of this. And it's definitely become a theme park.
Suzanne Moro Caro says, someone mentioned earlier about Patty being Kevin's guardian angel.
Ooh.
And I think it's sheer genius. She's a divine intervention. Like Kevin Sr. said at some point, he had to start listening to the voices. Holy smokes. She actually said something different. She said, holy shit. Buckle up, folks. This show rocks.
Being a guardian angel, and she was the divine intervention that prevented him from dying. Remember, she said, by divine intervention, you survived. Can you imagine if Patty is in fact that divine intervention?
No, I can't.
Why not?
Because Patty didn't save him. The water disappeared. Did Patty make the water disappear? That's why he didn't die.
Well, did she or did she not? Or is she just a part of his subconscious? Is she there just because
he would have died because of the water.
Yep.
Like Kevin would have died if it weren't for the water. So I don't think it was Patty. I don't think it was Kevin.
It was something else.
It was something else. It was that freaking cave woman. I don't know.
Valerie Ford Colley says, will somebody just open up Evie's birthday present to John already? Jesus.
Seriously. It's now covered in blood. This is disgusting.
Here we go. I'm thinking that it's not going to be opened up until the final episode.
Ooh, nice theory. Russell McVicker says, I thought it strange that when Kevin returned home, he settled Nora's anxiety about him not being departed. So she gave him a big hug, and then she turns and heads up the stairs by herself. No, where the hell have you been? Or anything like that. So,
all right, I'm not even going to attempt on this one because I need a woman's perspective. Darling, what is that about?
I'm still pissed.
Why is she pissed?
Because where the hell have you been? But she's too pissed. She's going to blow up right now. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to go cool off because really I'm super upset because I thought you were departed. Mm-hmm. But I'm about to rip your face off.
I just passed out and was out for hours.
That's how I would take it. Yeah. Like if you came home and I wanted to rip your face off because I had so much emotion, mm-hmm. but I knew, I don't really want to rip his face off. I'm kind of happy he's home, but I'm so full of sadness and grief and anger. Mm-hmm. I got to go cool off. So I think Nora just went upstairs to cool off because she probably would have said some bad things.
Yep. Do honey badgers rip people's faces off?
Yes.
Why not?
Do you know what honey badgers do?
Nope. They don't care. I know that. They don't give a shit. That's what they do.
You need to watch a honey badger eat something. Honey badgers are mean.
Alice James says, Kevin is always so sweaty. I know it's Texas, but he was the same before they went there. Why? Did you notice that Kevin's always sweaty?
He must just have a really high metabolism.
We went running. You know, I can attest this. It is Texas, and we were in Texas recently for a big podcasting conference.
Oh my God, it was so hot.
Oh my God, you walked out there. It was like hitting a freaking brick wall.
And at nighttime, because someone had said something like, oh, you guys are from the Northeast. And we were like, oh, it's fine. We'll just go out, you know, when the sun goes down. They were like, it doesn't cool off when the sun goes down. What are you talking about? We were like, oh, in Rhode Island, it drops 20 degrees when the sun goes down. It's very nice.
We have normal weather.
They were like, no, it stays the same.
Oh my God, how do you even live like that? I'm sorry, if anybody's from Texas, I'm making fun of your state, but because, you know, don't mess with Texas. But it's just too hot. I don't get it. Ren A. Sands Simon says, we heard your podcast today and we enjoyed it. I wish I could write that this show means how much it means to me, but it would take too much time for you to read. I loved Orange Sticker, but I have to say Off Ramp has got to be my all-time favorite so far for season 2. The imagery of the cult and the ones who are helped to be reprogrammed, something I'm a little too familiar with. When Susan finds the note any day now, that haunts me. She is a brilliant actress. Off Ramp, I would give 5 Damons. An Orange Sticker, 4 Damons. Which reminds me, my love, have you considered any other up or down movement in your Damon rating for this past episode?
No, I'm sticking with 4.
Yeah, I've heard some things about this episode. Some people were saying it was a little bit of a step back for The Leftovers. I would wholeheartedly disagree. In fact, I thought it was a great, brilliant step forward for it. Again, like I said, I thought it was the most complete episode that we've had. And I've had time to watch it again. And I can't get enough.
When do you have time to watch it again?
Well, you know, here and there, I can watch it at the office. I can blow off work like I'm doing right now. I'm actually recording this in the middle of the day during my work day. That's okay. That's right. That's fine.
I don't
right?
even have time to eat dinner because I have kids in my hands.
She's actually eating right now.
If you hear like nom nom nom, it's because I literally never have time to eat because I'm in charge of our children. Anyway, Cliff Lawrence said, "What if John wasn't evil at all?"
Mm.
What if he actually does believe in miracles? And what if Erica is the miracle in miracle and he is just protecting his wife?
Wow.
Remember when she dug up that bird in the shoebox in episode 1? She said a little prayer before she pushed the dirt away. Mm-hmm. What if Erica met Matt's wife when they first got to town? And if that is why she briefly awakened from her vegetative state?
Wow. Unbelievable. Really, truly unbelievable thought. Because maybe that is why John is doing what he has to do. Because I remember Brian Davids in the Brian Davids Thought of the Week said, maybe John is doing things that we just don't understand quite yet. So they look like, yeah, they're bad. They're burning people's houses down. Sure. But maybe he's got a reason. Maybe he's doing something. Maybe he's doing it for a very valid reason. And he brought up, as a matter of fact, Ben Linus in Lost.
We have to go back, Kate.
He brought up Ben Linus because when you first met Ben, you hated him. You couldn't stand him. Like he was hurting like his daughter Alex. He was preventing her from seeing the boyfriend, and he was doing things, but he was doing it all in protection for the island. Right?
Yeah.
So maybe John is doing the same exact thing. He's pulling a Ben Linus.
Well, the
we
only
have to
thing
go back, Kate.
There you go. That was the sound I wanted.
There you go. The only thing that gives me a little hesitancy about this is Isaac, because I believe Isaac's got some supernatural stuff going on too, some magical stuff.
Yeah, I'll go along to get along with that. I think I can do that. Hey, as for Twitter, we got Denise Stewart. Denise Stewart, I love this lady. I love her because she is an avid listener to our Outlander podcast. Check that at outlandercast.com, shameless plug. And she is a brand new listener. And as we all know, we got a sound for that. So one more in the bank. And Denise Stewart says, all right, I'm finally in. The first few episodes of the season one of The Leftovers, WTF. But now I'm on episode 7, and I cannot wait to see what's next. Thank you for the podcast as well. Denise, thank you so much for joining us. We love that you're here, and you're freaking awesome. Shakita chimes in. She says, by the way, guys, it's wherever you go, there you are. Apparently, we said it's not... We said wherever you are, there you'll be. And you know what? Hey, semantics, I'll go along to get along. Thank you so much for correcting us on that. Tariq chimes in and says, I'm like Blake with Patty. I loved her just tagging along behind Kevin talking. I want her to be real, not just his conscience. Terry, thank you. And by the way, she's a huge Royals fan. So go Royals. Hopefully they go up 2-0 in the World Series. I'm so excited for them. I hope they win because I can't stand the freaking Mets. Mets suck, just like the Yankees. But I will say, I'm not sure if I want Patty to be real. I like the idea that she's part of his conscience. What do you think, my love?
I want her to be real. I think she's real. I do.
In what fashion do you think she's real?
In the fashion that I don't even want to talk about it because I'm afraid of ghosts, and I'm afraid if I admit it, I'm going to have ghosts following me around pushing my head on stoves. That's what I think. Man. Preston Young tweets, Erica is in on it. She helped the girls run away. That's what they were signing about.
Ooh,
and I'm feeling that too. Remember how I was like, she was a little too calm, and she was like, oh, she's going to be, you know. I don't know. If my daughter ran away or if my daughter disappeared, be freaking out.
She was pretty calm about it.
I would not have steady hands. And I know that as nurses that they need to have steady hands. So whatever.
And nurses, we love you. We love you very much. You are God. You're doing God's work.
But I mean, her daughter's disappeared and now her husband's shot. And she's kind of like cool as a cucumber.
And she just kind of like, she's like, yeah, Evie's better than that.
But, you know, some people are really good in emergency situations, so I don't know. But I do think Erica is somehow in on this as well, Preston.
Like you. You're really good in emergency situations. Remember that guy when that guy hit my motorcycle?
I'm amazing in that emergency. I saved my mom's life. I saved my brother's life. I saved Reese's life already.
Oh, my God. When did you save Reese's life?
When he was choking.
Oh, at the restaurant.
And you and your dad were like laughing, like, oh, what's going on? I'm like, your son just almost choked. You're welcome. As a piece of orange flew across the room, I'm like, Anita tweets, The Leftovers new opening is both funny and annoying at the same time.
I don't know. What do you think? You think it's good? I mean, I know we already talked about it, but like, I don't know. It's growing on me. Stevie O says, Patty, dear, I will forgive you for a lot, but talking shit about Nora is not one of them.
Emma F tweets, also, I still have questions about the logistics of handcuffs sleeping together, but the hooking the leg over the thing is so very real.
Yeah, how you hook somebody, hook your leg over your partner.
Yeah, like the spoon, leg spoon.
I'm a huge spooner. I'm totally into spooning. Although I'm always required to be the big spoon, and sometimes I want to be the little spoon. Would you handcuff yourself to me?
I don't think you'd want me to be handcuffed. No, because
you'd be dragging me looking for chickens.
And Elise Keating tweets, if you look up ride or die in the dictionary, you'll find a picture of Nora Durst.
Actually, I do want to ask you about the Patty and Nora thing. I know we made fun of it a little bit earlier, but Patty is saying what Kevin has is not love. It's damage control. I mean, do you agree? Is Kevin just with Nora because it's expedient?
I've already talked about this. Speed, okay? I don't think it is going to be a quality relationship. And I know I'm against 99.9% of people. Like, everyone freaking loves Nora and Kevin. And I love Nora and Kevin. But let me tell you, that line from Speed about how you can't have a good, real relationship when you meet in times of, you know, chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think it's true. And I kind of think it was quick for a rebound.
So are you going on the record here? Are you going on the record that it's no good?
I'm not. I'm just saying I'm worried. I'm not saying that it's no good. I'm just saying I'm a little worried.
You can't put down Nora. She's perfect.
I'm not putting her down. I'm just saying maybe they needed a little bit more time to find themselves because they're both crazy.
America's Most Wanted says, so I'm supposed to believe that baby was just chilling quietly in that box the whole time? Come on, son.
Okay, I normally would have said, I agree, except our second child, Felicity, she's quiet.
She is quiet.
So often. So if Lily's like Felicity, she might have just been quiet. You know which baby pisses me off, though?
What?
The baby in The Walking Dead.
Judith?
Judith needs to cry.
I think Judith is dead. I think they're just carrying a dead baby around.
She never cries. So Lily, if Lily doesn't cry for a couple of hours, that's fine.
That
but
happens.
Judith on the Walking Dead.
She didn't cry for an entire season.
She still doesn't cry. I mean, she cried like one day. But like, let me be honest.
In the church.
If you had a baby during the zombie apocalypse, your baby would be.
Like our kid, if we had Reese in the zombie apocalypse.
It's like a siren. Come here, if I'm zombies. There are people here. Anyway.
We'd be dead. Dead in a heartbeat.
Voicemail time.
All right.
Hi, this is Lisa Nattinger calling from Crest Hill, Illinois. Love the podcast. All right. Kind of nervous. Okay, I just was thinking and came across this, that there's a big Australian theme on the show, the season thus far. And what I am bringing this connection to is Olivia Newton-John's songs were actually on the show. And the Australian, there's your Down Under connection. But the interesting thing is what Patty was singing to him. And Olivia John actually had a husband who was missing, presumed dead, but came back. Could Patty have faked everything and she is really there? And that's why I call him Tower Moses, actually saw her. And I noticed the time when he was in the kitchen, the back door was open. So I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty far cry, but I was just thinking about the Olivia Newton-John connection.
Holy Olivia Newton-John.
Wow. I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that she had a husband, number one, and number two, that he faked his death and they found him in Australia.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Wasn't she Australian?
She is Australian.
Yeah.
But I didn't even know that, like, you know, he was in Australia and he faked a death. And like, and again, that's another thing too. People coming back and getting found. And even Nora was making that reference too when she was in the sudden, the Department of Sudden Departure, the DSD. She was in charge of fraud and finding people. And how she found the fucker in Puerto Rico and everything, or wherever it was. This little notion keeps coming back of finding people who have departed. So I really like this. As for the Patty thing, you know, again, like we mentioned in the previous episode, they showed Patty's dead body, and I know it could have been faked. I seriously doubted seeing that, spoiler alert, glass piece going to her neck and the blood spurting out. I don't think that's faked. And even though the back door may or may not be open, they showed her body for a reason, to let us all know, like we said last episode, that she is definitely, most certainly dead.
Hey, Blake and Mary, this is Suzanne Carew. I loved last night's episode. It was a 5-Damon, 5-Alarm John Fire for me leading up to the episode. Some of the previews that showed Nora and Kevin had me really concerned for their already fragile relationship, and I kept wondering, you know, can she really save him, or is this honeymoon over before it really begins? Keep in mind, this was a relationship forged in mutual grief and a mutual desire to escape, but there really wasn't much substance there otherwise before they decided to just turn the page and raise a new family in a new town together. Patty honestly said it best when she questioned whether or not this was truly love or if it was just damage control, you know, that they had both lost everything and were they just clinging to one another to have something. And not to shortchange Kevin's journey in this episode, which was epic, but Nora went through quite a journey herself. She felt every possible emotion, from panic that the departure might have happened again to suspicion regarding Kevin's whereabouts. She looked upwards all the time for signs or answers. And at the end, she literally handcuffed herself to him. And that was it. That was the turning point moment. That's exactly the kind of love that Patty was referring to. You know, that pull a bullet out of you, I trust you didn't do anything bad moment that cemented them in this together. And it's going to be quite a ride watching to see how this plays out. You know, is Kevin going to start to listen to Patty, who is now arguably his guardian angel and not a force of evil? Will Nora have to acknowledge that presence in his life? And will they have to work together to save him and figure out just what the hell happened to these girls? I don't know about you, but I am literally counting the days until next Sunday.
Wow, sweetheart. It sounds like Susan's on your side, at least for a little bit there.
Yeah.
That maybe they just jumped into it. But I will give Susan, and she made this point, I'll give her credit about this. Nora did chain herself to Kevin. That is pull the bullet out of you, right? I mean, that is something special. Like, she is handcuffing herself to this gentleman to make sure that no matter where he goes, she goes. Now, if that's not devotion, I don't know what is.
I think it's fear.
Fear for what?
Him not waking up in bed with her.
Oh, so you're saying it's more of a selfish motivation as opposed to an unselfish motivation when she's just trying to protect him.
Yes.
So it's more like, I gotta be near you so that I don't freak out again.
Yeah. Or so that you don't walk, you know, in your sleep, but that freaked her out. It's more about her.
Oh, I don't know. I think I just see too much good in Nora for her to be like
that. It's not that it's anything bad. It's just, I've got issues and here's a way that I know I can work on it.
We all know that she's making a case for TV's perfect girlfriend. The best girlfriend. I'm just saying that. I'm throwing that out there. We said this earlier. It's happening.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Preston from Montgomery, Alabama. I just want to say I love you guys, love what you're doing with the show, and just keep up the good work. I just wanted to say that I'd give this episode orange sticker about 3.5 out of 5 Damons. I really liked what they did with the exploration of loss. We kind of saw this in The Garveys at Their Best, the immediate, you know, departure happening, and then the whole first season is about, you know, picking up 3 years later. But what I really liked about Orange Sticker is kind of stewing in the immediate loss that everyone is affected by with Evie. And I just really liked the feeling that we get of what it's like right after the fact. And that's something that we've never really gotten to explore before. But that's what I thought. You guys are great. Keep up the great work. And yeah, hope to hear you soon on air.
Wow, thank you so much for that. And we did mention this earlier, last episode, where it took the departure, Evie leaving or disappearing or vanishing or whatever, and it did give it a micro view of the departure. And you bring up a great point. And Mary, I want to know what you think about this too. We finally get a chance to see what it's like immediately after a departure, you know, in quotations. Do you think that this is something that's worth exploring in The Leftovers and in The Departure, you know, in quotations?
Well, I don't know. Are we definitely saying that this is a departure, just like the original one? Because what throws me off is the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't an earthquake with the original departure.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I will say this, and you can kind of consider this a sudden theory of the week. And maybe I'll just play the music. It may be a sudden theory of the week, because while I said in the last episode that Patty was telling the truth the entire time, if you noticed, she chose her words very carefully. She didn't say Evie departed, or those girls departed. She said those girls vanished. And vanish is certainly different than departed. If you vanish, it could be anything. Vanishing could be done by choice. You saw that by, what's his name? The guy from, what's it called? Perfect Strangers. He vanished. He chose to go away. And they found him in Mexico. Granted, he made it look like a departure. Or the guy that went to Puerto Rico that Nora was investigating, he vanished. But he didn't depart. So I think Patty chose her words very carefully.
Hmm.
And even though I did say maybe they did depart, Patty's still telling the truth, by the way. She's still saying, hey, they're gone. They vanished. Just not necessarily departed. What do you think about that?
I don't know. to be honest, I don't know.
Fair enough.
Hey, this is Scott from Louisville. 5 Damons for sure. Been away for a couple of weeks, trying to catch up both on the podcast and the show. And all I got to say is, Patty is real. She knew where Kevin's phone was. There's no way that Kevin did. All that business about hot, cold, hot, cold. She knows. It's like she's watching him from above and knows everything that he's doing and knows that he lost his phone and was able to help him find it. It also seems like Kevin is, in fact, sleepwalking again, and that it really wasn't a matter of teleportation from his bed to the drained-out lake, which is what I thought was the case. And Patty mentions an act of divine intervention. So it's almost like something or someone has saved Kevin from himself, now that we know that he was trying to kill himself. I kind of look at Kevin like Jack Shepard from Lost. I really think he is now...
We have to go back, Kate.
...of everything that happens in The Leftovers, if he wasn't before. There's clearly some sort of plan for him, but he clearly doesn't know what it is. And the weird thing is Patty does. It's like she's become Kevin's guardian angel, which is something I would have never envisioned ever. So, gotta love the Patty-Kevin interplay. And clearly, those two are kind of intertwined. And it'll be very interesting to see how things play out. Great podcast as always. We'll keep watching and keep listening. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott, for calling in. And you did mention this idea of Patty being a guardian angel keeps coming up again. And I love this notion that maybe she is there for good. Do you think that she's there for good, or do you think that she's there for nefarious purposes?
I think she's there until the dog comes home. I already said that.
Which is a great point, by the way, that there are dogs living among the people in Miracle, by the way. They're not all in quarantine, as Brian Davids mentioned in our last podcast.
No, because those dogs were originally in Miracle.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm glad that there are they're not just keeping animals, you know, in cages outside of the park. That would suck.
Maybe they just didn't have time for the animal trainers on this set. They were like, you know what? It took a lot of time with the deer and the dogs. Let's just skip dogs this season.
I wonder if Kevin really is a part of something bigger, like Jack in Lost. Is he something that is there? He's part of something that's bigger than what he realizes, just like Jack was.
I think so.
And you know, there are some people out there that have kind of criticized a lot of podcasts, including ours, by the way, which is totally fine. You're entitled to your opinion, for comparing Lost to The Leftovers. And while I get sometimes it can be overbearing, it is a sound comparison. Damon Lindelof has certain things that he likes to write about. He employs certain methods and certain themes and ideas and philosophies, and it's reasonable to actually compare certain tropes that he uses to each particular property, whether it's Lost, whether it's the movie Prometheus, whether it's Tomorrowland, or whether it's The Leftovers, Cowboys and Aliens. I mean, God knows, whatever property that he's written in, it's reasonable to use those comparisons. So I shame those who do not allow. I shame you for not allowing comparisons to Lost. Please, if anybody wants to compare them, please call in and do that. All right, last voicemail, kid. You ready?
Yep.
Hello, fellow lefties. Missy here again. I hope everyone enjoyed this last episode as much as I did. I usually talk about what I thought of the episode and my favorite scenes when I call in. However, this time I wanted to do something a little different. First off, I want to say that I'm a member of the Leftovers group chat on Facebook, and there are several fans on board. I actually joined the group a few weeks prior to season 2's premiere. This group chat is awesome. If any of you are on Facebook and love the Leftovers, you should request to join in. Every episode has its own discussion on the feed, and I find it amazing how the show can bring together groups of people from different cultures, different backgrounds, ages, and we all become one big family. So I'd like to share a few members' thoughts and comments from the chat group to include them. Lisa Nanninger says, the baby doll spotted where Kevin was searching for his phone look like the Aborted babies used in BC and AJ.
Oh, good one.
If y'all remember the babies that were replaced, the baby doll that was replaced from season 1 to replace the baby Jesus. So that's what she was referring to. And Russell McVicker says, why did Kevin step on the vial of water? And Lisa replied, the crushing the vial of water is to show the water is gone. This town didn't believe the water could restore them. These are just a couple of comments that were in some conversations that are in the group chat, and I wanted to let everybody know that there are more of us lefties out there that are wrecking their brains over this mysterious series. So stop by, check it out, see if you can join in. It's a lot of fun. Also, I wanted to remind everyone to stop by the Living Reminders blog to catch up on some great reading material about The Leftovers. We have amazing writers who are fans just like you and I, and they pour out their hearts and their minds, show their spirit for The Leftovers. So be sure to leave them some feedback and help make our fan base community grow. We'd love to see what your thoughts are. You can find us at thelivingreminders.com and click on the blog link. You can also go to thelivingreminders.blogspot.com. Again, I'm Missy Ortiz, editor of The Living Reminders blog, and you can follow me on Twitter at Missy G. Ortiz. Thanks, Mary and Blake.
Well, thank you, Missy. Thank you so much for not only bringing up the blog, which is actually very important, shameless plug, but also the Leftovers chat group on Facebook. I'm part of it as well, and I adore going to the Leftovers chat as soon as the episode is over. Even if you don't want to participate in the conversation, it's at least great to be kind of a lurker, to be like the fly on the wall and see the conversation happen as you go. It's great to hit the refresh button and see new comments that come up each and every time. These people are smart, man. We're all one giant community. That's why we even do this podcast. That is why we're doing a second freaking episode of The Living Reminders, just to satiate all of our need for The Leftovers. So, yeah, please, if you're on Facebook, go to The Leftovers chat. It's an amazing place. And yes, please, I'll be a little self-serving. Go to the Living Reminders blog. Just go to livingreminders.com, click on the word blog, and check out all the great articles by Missy herself and by myself, too. Blake, I have an article there as well. There's a lot of great things. My favorite article so far is actually written by Brian Davids of the Brian Davids Thought of the Week. It's an article about how Walter White had flies, but John Murphy has crickets. Remember that episode, my love?
Yes.
The fly episode. Remember we watched? We were like, what the hell was that about? But then we finally kind of got it, and we realized that we're just a little bit smarter, hopefully, than we actually really are. All right, kiddo, you ready for the tweet of the week?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. This week's tweet of the week goes to Samantha K. She says, can't believe it took her 2 seasons to handcuff herself to Justin Theroux. That'd be first date strategy for me. I would tend to agree. I think I would personally handcuff myself to Justin Theroux. He's that good looking of a man. I'm not afraid to admit it. How about you? You afraid to admit that?
No, that'd be great.
Well, Samantha, congratulations on being this week's Tweet of the Week. For being the Tweet of the Week, you get a $20 gift card to Tag Your It Etsy shop. You can go there and redeem it. Please go to www.tagyourit.biz, and you'll be able to redeem your $20 gift card and get whatever your heart desires, whether it's Leftovers related or it's something that Dawn, the owner, can create by herself that's just totally unique to you. You got $20 to go ahead and do that. So
boom.
That's pretty freaking awesome. What do you think? Yeah, I think so. Sorry, Mary left me hanging there. That's okay. We're not professionals. You ready to close out the show?
Yes.
Guys, thank you so much for participating and listening and being a part of our first listener feedback episode. That's totally dedicated to you guys. I'm so excited. So let's close out the show.
Thanks again for listening to the Living Reminders podcast. You can always find us on social media. Facebook and Twitter are where we post the most. We're also on Instagram, but all of their handles are the same. It's Living Reminders.
And if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at the Gmail machine at livingreminders@gmail.com. livingreminders.com.
Head on over to our website, thelivingreminders.com. There you'll find the blog that Missy was talking about, all of our previous episodes, and tons of other cool things.
And while you're there, you can also tack on this little support button that says on the website that says support, and you can find a bunch of different ways to support us. One would be including Patreon, as we already mentioned at the beginning of the episode, where you can donate $1 or $2 or $125 billion per month. We'd be glad to accept it. Another way is through PayPal. If you just want to do a one-time donation, you can totally do that to help keep this a free podcast. But the most important thing you can do for a free podcast is tell a friend. Tell a friend that we provide enough value for you and the experience for the leftovers, that we are good enough for this, and that we do a good enough job for you. Tell a friend that we exist, and let them know that the leftovers exist and that we're pretty freaking awesome.
Oh my gosh, and humble.
Well, yes, I know.
Head on over to iTunes, possibly, and give us a rating and review. That's another way to let other people learn about our show. And as always, everyone, my name's Mary.
Oh, wait, hold on. We can't close it out quite yet.
What? What do you need?
Our next episode is the interview with Amy Brenneman. It's Amy Brenneman. We are having Lori herself on the show. That'll be our next episode. I just want to remind everybody about that.
We're very excited about it.
Me too. She actually came up with a lot of good stuff. We recorded with her last night, so I'm really excited. Okay, now we can do it. Go ahead.
I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.